Well, most of you know who I am, but there's the odd person that maybe hasn't seen me before. I do attend this church, but I'm also the chaplain for the hospitals here in town. So, thanks for the opportunity to preach to you. Pastor Art had to run an errand elsewhere. And as you can read in your worship folder, today's sermon is on heaven. We, all of us, are on a little journey. Some of us a little bit more than maybe we'd like the journey to be. And sometimes the end of our journey seems to be clouded a little bit and isn't so easy for us to see. Yet, we're told that our ultimate end of our life, we get to be in heaven. And so our journey is very much worth taking. For us, some of us, our journey is more like a wild ride down a slide that we can't seem to get off of. And we're only hoping and praying that all the excitement is maybe worth the fear and trembling that we're going through while we're taking this ride. We're, of course, are also told the cliche that the only thing in life that is for certain is death and taxes. And most of us are about to do our taxes. As Christians, we're told that we don't need to fear death anymore because Jesus has removed the sting of death. In fact, we as Christians need to look at it more like a homegoing, that we're actually just going home. We're going home, but what does it look like? Well, unfortunately, I personally haven't been there, and if I had, I'm not so convinced I'd come back and tell you about it. So instead, we will check with a reputed source, and that is, of course, the Bible, and that's why we read from Revelation 21. There's a few other places in the Bible that talk of heaven, but I'd like to just focus on the six verses that we read from in Revelations. And as you all know, there is always something exciting we can learn from the Bible. First of all, I'd like to remind us that the book of Revelations was written by the Apostle John. And he happened to be stuck on an island just off the edge of Turkey in the Mediterranean Sea. He was writing down some of his visions that and instructions that Jesus was giving him. It was a book that was to give Christians hope, and yet it seems to us a book that is somewhat hard to understand. It's not a book that is written like a science textbook, and so future events sometimes are a little bit difficult for people to comprehend and to write about. And so this book is a little more difficult to be read and gotten used to. And nonetheless, it is a book that is well worth reading because it speaks of our ultimate victory over sin and pain. John speaks of a new heaven because the one we live on now will go away. It's of interest to note that the word translated heaven in this passage can also be translated sky or the atmosphere that's around this ball that we're sitting on. So it looks that God doesn't necessarily have to remake heaven, the place that he lives at, but maybe he only has to replace our earth and the sky around it. We're not told why God will make a new earth instead of just renewing it. In 2 Peter 3:7, we're told that this earth is reserved for fire for the day of judgment. So maybe God is just getting rid of all the evil and he decides to make it new for those who are pure so that they can spend eternity with him. Sometimes people read this verse and say, oh, we don't need to worry about what we do with this earth. We can destroy it any way we like, since that's what's going to happen to it anyways. And so we use it and abuse it. I suspect that that is not what God had hoped would happen by writing this verse. Because we all know we got to live somewhere while we're still here, and so it would be nice to have a place that's clean and healthy. You know, some of us might actually have grandkids or great-grandkids that need the place to live. So we as Christians should still take care of where we live. Yet who knows, maybe it is a prediction that God has that we will make such a mess of this world that the only way for Him to make it better is to just make it new rather than to renew it. The other interesting statement that John makes is that on this new earth, there will no longer be a sea. Being that John was locked away on an island, it might have been a relief to him to know that there will no longer be any place to be isolated. And maybe the sea to him was a place of death and misery. And so on the new earth, this is all done away with. And there is no more room for a sea. And so if big fish and open water is your idea of perfection, I suspect you will be disappointed. However, for the rest of us that are landlubbers and seem to be locked away on solid earth, we don't have to worry about drowning at sea in paradise. And so, there will be a roadway to anywhere you want to go. So that might be a wonderful blessing for us. Next, John tells us that he speaks of a new Jerusalem coming down from God to earth. He describes it as a beautifully dressed bride. This is not the way we normally talk about a city. However, that is the way God chose to describe it. But to John, who would have probably seen the original Jerusalem destroyed, it would have been very exciting for him to see that there was a new one, and it was going to be very beautiful. It might be great for him to know that it wasn't all over for his beloved city, but that there would again be a royal city, that a holy city where God lived. I'm not sure we as Christians living in the 21st century can fully comprehend that idea, especially for the Jews and the early Christians, when they saw that their special city was ransacked and demolished by the Romans in 70 AD. It meant that the special place where God was no longer possible for them to be at. Obviously, we as Christians now believe that God is in each one of us, and so we don't have to go someplace to go see God. But for the early Christians who used to go to the temple, that was where they would meet with God and feel His presence, so to speak, and could experience Him personally there, in a sense. It was a very big devastation. And so seeing that a new Jerusalem, a new place on earth where God was going to be, was a relief to them, and where they could experience God fully again would be something to look forward to for them. And in fact, a voice tells John that is exactly what is going to happen. It tells him that God will live with humanity. This is a very new thing, since humanity decided not to follow God's instruction to stay holy and pure. He couldn't live with them anymore because they were not holy like God. And so he couldn't exist, or better said, we can't exist in a holy place at the same time as God. And yet now in the future, everything will be new, and humanity will be able to again be the people of God that we were meant to be. And He will live with us. God will no longer be far away, and He will be very near to us. He will live among His people, and He will be their God, we're told. So there will no longer be a question as to where or who God is, because we can't seem to feel or touch Him at times. And so we will be able to reach out and know and see and experience, and He will be very visible and very involved with us in heaven. We're told that He, well, on this earth, in paradise, we're told that He will be so involved that He will indeed wipe away every tear. And then we're told that there will be no more reasons for tears, because death and mourning, crying or pain will be no more. And so this is very exciting to know that one day we will not have to put up with anything nasty and evil. It will be gone from this life. It will be no more. So this should give us some hope that after we're done with life here on this earth, things will be much better on the new earth. We will no longer need to deal with evil or nasty things, but we will be in the very presence of God, who will take care of us. It would seem that it will be more than just an existence, you know, floating in the sky in some cloud playing a harp, or like some other people, living in nirvana, in nothingness. But it will be a very much an existence, what we're doing now, only better. We will be with God, and we will be His people, and life will be continued to go on. We will be living in a wonderful place, because the negative and horrible thing experiences we put up now will no longer have to be dealt with. We will be able to do exciting things with our God, who loves each one of us and who will be with us. God tells the Apostle John as well that He is making everything new, and what He has said about this is very trustworthy and true. God doesn't tell lies, we're told, and He is worthy to trust. He is also worth believing. John, in fact, could write this down either on paper or in stone, because they were worth writing and they were worth believing. The Christians through the ages have believed these words and often paid for their belief with their life to prove what they believed and that they believed and trusted God. And so we too can believe God has something wonderful, good for us in the life hereafter. God goes on to say that He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Alpha and Omega are the Greek letters in the alphabet, the first one and the last one in their alphabet. And so He is the beginning and the end. God is everything. He is everlasting, and He is all we need. In God's mind, everything has been done already. For us, we need to sometimes wait just a little longer to see it completed. But in God's eyes, it's as good as done. We don't need to fear that something might go wrong yet, or that maybe He's forgotten a detail. No, God is still in control, and He's able and has done everything He needs to be done. And He's done it right. Sometimes when we look around us, we get confused and forget that God is in control. God sometimes has allowed evil to run rampant here, because that's what we chose to do. But now, the future will be much better when He fixes it and makes it perfectly new. God gives us another gift, we're told. We are allowed to drink from the spring of the water of life. We're not really sure what exactly that is, but it would imply that it is something wonderful, something that we as human beings need, and something which will make life much better for us. And we're told that it's a gift, and so, because it's a gift, we don't need to buy it, we don't need to earn it, we don't need to beg for it, but rather God gives it to us because He loves us and wants to give us good things. So He gives us this gift too. God, of course, gave us the gift of forgiveness on the cross so that we could have eternal life. But He also wants to give us more gifts, and He will continue to give us gifts because God is wonderful and He wishes to share things like that. And so, even in these few verses, we find that God has many exciting things for us, good things in store for each one of us. Once we no longer live on this earth, we will have a wonderful new place for us to live. Not alone, not isolated, not stuck on an island, but amongst the people of God, amongst the presence of God, in fact, among God Himself, who will be involved with us on a daily basis. And we will be able to communicate and commune with God and His people. We will have a sense of community, a sense of belonging, a place to be, a wonderful place. And so ultimately, I trust I will see all of us there one day. Thank you very much. And as you will notice, I preach slightly less long than Art, so you get to fellowship a little bit more afterwards. Oh yeah, thanks.
If you all would like to stand and we'll sing this last song together. It is going to be an exciting day. When that time comes and we can go to heaven. It's kind of like this song sings about. We've done it a few times lately, and it's maybe new still to some of you, but this is an opportunity to get more familiar with it, and we can celebrate how we will rise and be with just listening to the angels sing.